Welcome back to the Brian Kronberger Financial Hour. We've talked a lot about the markets and the economy and why we continue to believe that this market can go higher. And so we still take the position of overweighting equities. Again, next week we're going to be at the Preakness following Jimmy Mathis' show, 142nd running of the Preakness. So a great day for Baltimore. And look forward to talking to you more about the final verdict on the earnings season. Again, expectations, 15% year-over-year growth. That'll be the third quarter of double-digit earnings gains. This has been a market that's followed really that kind of the nadir of the market in the first quarter of 2009. It's almost synonymous with the profit growth that we see in the S&P 500 to where we are today. And you can make a case that if there is corporate tax reform, that this market may be slightly undervalued. I'm knocking on wood as we speak. I still believe that even though we're expectations for returns in the market should be lower going forward just because the move we've had, we still, again, favor equities over fixed income. Again, a balanced portfolio for most of us probably makes the most sense. As we talked about last week, we're going to get into estate planning and asset protection. We've got star attorney Maurice Offit from Offit Kerman. Maurice has been in the business for 42 years, based in the Columbia area. The Offit Kerman folks have six offices: Tyson's Corner, Bethesda, Baltimore, Philly, Columbia, and Frederick. And this is a firm that's growing. Started in 1987 with two attorneys. Now they're up to about 135. And one of the great growth stories in the legal profession. Maurice, glad to have you on the Brian Kronberger Financial Hour.
Thank you, Brian. Glad to be here.
Maurice, I guess just from a big picture topic, when you think families and listeners to the program, we certainly try to agitate with our clients to make sure that they get legal help in terms of their asset protection, estate planning documents. What's your general thought process for people out there, regardless of the size of their assets? How often should they be working with someone like yourself and kind of reviewing, their family planning documents, and how often should they be revisiting that process?
I think if you get to be old enough, you make four wills during your lifetime. You make a will when your children are small. You make a will when your children are grown. You make a will when your grandchildren are small. And you make a will when your grandchildren are grown. And each of those stages, you talk about different issues. When your children are small, the big worry is, what if both parents suddenly pass away in an accident? Who's going to take care of the children? Who's going to manage the money until they're old enough to inherit it? When the children are grown, it's a different story. You no longer have to worry about who's going to take care of the children. You have to worry about, are your children ready to receive the inheritance that you've set aside for them? Will they go ahead and suddenly spend the money on things that they shouldn't? Or would receiving an inheritance prevent them from having the drive that they need to go out and work hard and be successful? Or would they enter into a marriage and share their inheritance with their spouse, and then they and their spouse get divorced, and now they're left without the full inheritance that they received? Different issues come up when your grandchildren are small. You think about trying to fund their education, and when your grandchildren are grown, you start thinking about, have my children made it enough so that I can give most of my estate to my grandchildren instead of my children?
And I know that a lot of our clients, and I'm sure that's synonymous with society in a larger aspect, really difficult for them to determine whether who makes the decisions on behalf of younger children, but more importantly, as the children grow older, some kids are capable of making intelligent, informed decisions about their wealth, some children not. And I know the clients really kind of consternate over who is the trustee overseeing it for the younger kids, a family member, and is that the right person, should be a friend? And then when the kids get older, again, some just have the mental capacity to take that on and not. What is your advice? Because estate plans don't get finished because they struggle with who is in charge. How do you help people deal with that type of situation?
So I think it's a difficult decision as to who you go ahead and name to manage your children's inheritance until they're old enough to receive it. Dealing with clients over the years, for the most part, I found that many people name their siblings, If you don't name your siblings, sometimes you name good friends. Sometimes you name trusted advisors. Sometimes you name banks or trust companies. They all have advantages and disadvantages. I think from the standpoint of qualities that you're looking for, you're looking for people who are impeccably honest because they have signature authority over the money that they're holding for your children. And the second thing that you're looking for is someone who has not necessarily background of being a financial analyst, but somebody who has some degree of financial experience, because I think that, you know, you're going to meet with professionals, you're going to hire professionals to help you manage their money until the children reach age. But you have to have an idea of decisions that you'll be asked to make.
Maurice Offutt, 42 years in the business, estate planning, succession planning, asset protection. With Offutt Kerman, let's touch on asset protection. General thoughts to the listeners in the audience. What should they be thinking about asset protection, titling of accounts, issues surrounding the current climate in the world that we live in?
So we live in a world that has too many lawyers and too many lawsuits. And that I think that most people, if they've, quote, made it, unquote, that their big worry is how can the savings that I've worked so hard for be taken by a potential claimant, a claimant that you don't expect will be coming towards you, a claimant for which you don't have insurance to go ahead and protect you. So the concept between asset protection planning and estate planning is, what good is your estate plan if your assets have been seized by claimants before you pass away? So I think that every client that I see, we talk about asset protection planning. We say, are there steps that have been taken to protect your savings from future claims? And that along that line, you know, I think that clients and somewhat the professional community as well is missing the boat. They think that a lawsuit won't be filed. I always say that asset protection planning is a plan B. Plan A, don't get sued. Plan A, if you get sued, win the suit. Plan A, if you lose the suit, have an insurance policy to pay the claim. And plan B is everything else. And I think it's a big mistake for people not to have a plan B.
For the plan B for asset protection, how difficult is it for, say, the average family? Is it a difficult process to go ahead and protect the assets against not winning claim A, being sued, losing the lawsuit? Is it difficult to recalibrate the titling of accounts, position of assets to accomplish, say, the plan B goal?
It depends on the assets you own. I can tell you that a very simple way of protecting your assets is to title assets in the name of husband and wife as tenants by the entireties. People may not be aware, but if your assets are owned as tenants by the entireties, and those are the key words, look at your brokerage statements, look at the deeds to your home, you know, see if those magical words appear, because if they do, in order for a claimant to seize assets owned as tenants by the entireties, claimants have to have a judgment entered against both husband and wife, and that if only one of the two spouses is sued, that person's half of the property owned as tenants by the entireties can't be seized. So the example that I give, if I'm sued and my wife and I own our house together as tenants by the entireties, half the value of our house, the half that I own, can't be taken by claimants.
Can you do any asset protection from an IRA standpoint?
IRA assets are already protected under law. There's nothing that needs to be done. So fortunately, in the state of Maryland, you know, we protect every type of retirement plan account, whether it's an IRA, whether it's a 401k, a 403b, all those accounts are protected from claims of creditors.
And from a standpoint of beneficiary designations on those retirement accounts, is there asset protection strategies for those individual IRA accounts, the Roth IRA accounts, 401ks, 403bs, 457s? Is there asset protection strategies for, say, the next generation that you potentially would advise clients to at least consider upon, you know, the death of, you know, death of the owner of the account?
So sometimes for people who are worried about asset protection planning for the beneficiaries that they're naming, if you name your spouse, there's no problem because your spouse has the ability to go ahead and roll over the retirement plan assets that you've designated for your spouse into your spouse's own IRA account. But if it's someone other than a spouse, you may consider naming a trust for the person's benefit instead of naming the person directly.
So if you have Maurice Offit, again, 42 years in the estate planning, asset protection business, Offit Kerman, based in Columbia. Maurice, I have three children, so you would have to sit down, we'd have to talk about the strategies, but would it potentially be three trusts for the kids as contingent or even possibly primary beneficiaries, or would it be one trust that potentially would include all three?
Usually it depends on the age of the children. If the children are small, many times people will go forward with what lawyers call as a pot trust, one big trust for the three children. The philosophy behind the pot trust is the same philosophy you have as you're raising your children. You're not keeping track of how much you spend on one child versus another. So a pot trust could give more money to one child than another because one child could have greater need than another. But as children get older and as parents, engage in the process of, providing for their children as they get older, they start to get away from this concept of having a pot trust. They think equality is the best. If I go ahead and buy a car for a child of mine at a certain age, I'll probably end up buying a car for another child of mine at a certain age. And I'll probably say that the cost of the second car resembles the cost of the first. So I think equality comes into play. And people take that into account when they do their planning. If you have three children and the children are older, you'll probably have three trusts.
Maurice Offit with Offit Kerman, again, speaking about just some estate planning topics, asset protection, succession planning. Let's talk about succession planning. 2008, 2009, certainly 07, 08, 09, certainly one of the toughest periods we've seen financially in a long time. Probably goes back to 73, 74, really more like 29 to 32. We have demographically around the world, certainly in this country, baby boomers getting up to the retirement age. I think 2022, the average baby boomer starts hitting the Medicare age of 65. A lot of business owners in that category. When you think about succession planning, really haven't had a lot of businesses being bought. Coming out of 08, 09 is really just kind of existing, surviving. Obviously many businesses did not survive that time period. But for those that have, and they're probably looking for an exit strategy at this point, from a legal standpoint, what are some of the topics that business owners and partnerships that are looking for that exit strategy should be considering with regard to succession planning?
Well, succession planning takes into account how will you transfer ownership in your business if you're in a family business to a younger generation. And that's a hard concept, for many, many reasons. First thing, sometimes, for example, you have three children in your family and only one of the three children has decided to go into business with you. How do you go ahead and transfer your ownership in that business to that child? Do you make a gift of the business to the child? Do you ask the child to purchase your ownership in the business from you? And regardless of what you do with that one child, it has a domino effect on the other children. If you go ahead and make a gift to the one child of your ownership interest in the business, are there sufficient assets in your estate to give to your other children? The concept of estate planning, I find is something that needs to be thought about well before a person's ready to retire. It's a process that takes a period of time for a family to collectively get their thoughts together on how they should proceed.
And certainly a great attorney will help them through that process. I know in the succession planning process that it's just difficult for them to even kind of consider some of the decisions that have to be made. I mean, so I would imagine that it could probably take years for them to come to grips with, how a child is going to be a part of the business and several other children are not, and how to equalize, if they're trying to equalize those assets.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And people identify themselves by the way that their business is performing. Many people, that I meet, I say, how are you doing? They say, my business is doing great. Not how they're personally doing, but they and their business are one and the same. So I think it's very hard for a person to accept the fact that they've reached the age where it's time to turn the business over to a younger generation of their family. They worry about what they'll do after the business has been turned over, whether they have sufficient assets to comfortably retire, and most of all, you know, how the person who's receiving the business, whether that person will continue to go ahead and keep the business successful, because they view that if the business is unsuccessful after the transfer takes place as a blemish upon their own reputation.
Maurice Offit of Offit Kerman, I would imagine then from a succession planning, your advice would be to start the dialogue sooner than later and try to get some of the bigger topics on the table just to address. And to your point, sometimes it's good to have, well, it's imperative to have legal counsel, but someone that can help you delineate some of the, you know, some of the different experiences that the attorneys had that may be to help them with their thought process in terms of, you know, trying to figure out how to attack the succession planning topic.
Yeah, I think that succession planning, in spite of the fact that I think lawyers are a key, member of the planning process, I think you need your whole advisory team to participate on the concept of succession planning. You need your accountant, you need your financial advisor, you need your attorney, and you certainly need the help and guidance of other members of your family.
And you've heard me talk about this a lot on the Brian Kronberger Financial Hour in terms of the collaboration between professionals, and we always talk about the financial advising team, and I agree totally with Maurice in terms of GE bringing all the important players together, because they're going to have different experiences that potentially could help solve the bigger issues. Let's say last topic, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, and I believe now that the health care bill could potentially be back onto the Senate, I think they're going to rewrite the health care bill, which probably prolongs tax reform. But assuming at some point tax reform does take place, and again, that's a big assumption with Washington, D.C. at this point. But assuming there is tax reform and the Trump team would like to do away with the death tax, what is your just general thoughts to listeners? Let's say there is a repeal of the death tax. There is none going forward, hypothetically speaking. You know, what do you tell clients, what do you tell the listeners in terms of how to, you know, mentally comprehend that? Because there's a lot of life insurance policies, second-to-die policies out there. There's a lot of estate tax planning that's taking place on the federal level. You know, what is your general thoughts, for us in terms of estate planning and the death tax?
Well, we're unsure what's going to happen to the death tax. If you take a look at history, back in 2001, George W. Bush was elected president. We had a Republican House, we had a Republican Congress, and there was passage of tax reform. And part of tax reform was that the estate tax was eliminated. But instead of eliminating it immediately, there was a 10-year phase-out that took place, that the actual year that estate tax was finally eliminated was 2010. And by the time that took place, Congress decided in 2011 to go ahead and reinstitute the estate tax. So we have an estate tax now. Unfortunately, a lot of people aren't subject to estate tax because you have to have at least $11 million if you're a married couple to have any federal estate tax be due. Nonetheless, there's lots of reasons for people to go ahead and to assume that if the death tax is eliminated, that, you know, there's still a need to go ahead and to logically dispose of who would make financial decisions and medical decisions on your behalf if you become incapacitated and couldn't make them on your own, and how your assets would be divided at the time you pass away. Separate and apart from taxes, people always have issues dealing with the distribution of what they own.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Not only do we not know what's going to happen in Washington, D.C., the rules are bound to change in the future, like they have in the past, no matter what happens. And let's not be fooled that if there is a repeal of the death tax, that does not stop the estate planning process.
That's exactly right. As far as the estate tax actually being eliminated, I did want to point out, you know, that it's a long process that politicians go through in order to reach a consensus. It's very hard to predict what they'll do. If I were listening to this show, I wouldn't assume that the death tax will be eliminated in the immediate future. I'd continue the planning process.
Maurice Offit of Offit Kerman, 42 years in the business. You can find him in the Columbia office. We'll certainly put his information on the Kronberger Financial Hour show page on WBL.com. Let's take a quick break. You're listening to the Brian Kronberger Financial Hour.